in the summary tables, and I don't have the specifics to do. I actually think that in this first iteration, this is the first state audit that they participated in. I think that the actual was not up to the standard set by the CAFPCI in terms of the matching between the chart data and what's submitted to the registry. There are a couple of reasons why they're working through this now in an iterative process, is that a lot of times they suspect that the data wasn't available in the chart because it's part of the outpatient record and thus just wasn't available. So a lot of it was just discrepancies. So for instance, there was a lot of discordance between heart failure classification, not specified heart failure classification 3 or 4, or one group higher or lower. So overall, I think that this is a process that will serve better going in the better in the future than it did for the first round. I will, and we talked to Helen about this, have that data in more detail when we present to the steering committee, just because I failed to realize that we would be talking about it today.
Oh, I think that would be helpful. So I think for now I would give them that partially for reliability. Mm-hmm. Anyone opposing? Mm-hmm. Objections? Questions? So for validity testing, they certainly tried to validate the results in a separate cohort by taking 2006 and 2007. The one part that I thought was missing, and this was actually acknowledged by the team that submitted this measure, that validation of code by chart review at other sites is needed. And so I felt that there was more validation work to be done, and I gave them a piece.
Mm-hmm. Can I just expand on that? So what we did, recognizing that this is a very different approach than what we've taken for all the other measures that we have developed, and that it's not all cause, it is cause specific. And this is our first toe in the water with that regards. The recognizing that we needed to validate this, we've done a single center chart review of all complications at Yale associated with an ICD. We actually abstracted all of the ICDs that were implanted, identified cases where we missed and cases where it actually was not accurate, and we used that to revise the codes that were identifying complications. Now we're in the process of carrying that forward. We're trying to recruit actively 9 centers across the U.S. that are fairly high implanting volumes so that we can further validate that we're getting the right codes.
Okay, and next is exclusions. Are the exclusions justified? I felt that all the exclusions that were implemented were justified. Any questions? I gave them a C. Okay. Next on the list is a risk adjustment for outcomes resource. Definitely the Yale group, they built a logistic regression model. The final model had 13 clinical variables in it. Most of the clinical variables had a lot of sense, at least made a lot of sense to me. They used the generalized linear model to adjust for clustering within hospitals and for differences in the number of patients at each hospital. I felt that the methodology was good. Obviously one could add other factors to adjust for, including socioeconomic status, as was raised previously. I'm not sure how doable that is, but except for that one, perhaps one minor limitation, I gave them a C.
What was the C statistic for the model?
It wasn't that. It was like 0.66. 0.61 or 0.61.
0.61, and in the hierarchical, the ROC is 0.65 or 6.
Any thoughts? Any concerns?
And I'd like to just make a comment about that. We've had our TAP from the prior project talking about risk adjustment models, and just you know, was very helpful to me in learning about risk adjustment models as well. And I think the comment was made earlier about reasons for low C statistics for risk adjustment models, and that does not mean it's a bad model. That it could be, you know, the actual care process variables are the things that are driving the differences. And they suggest, and something we'll be looking at more to in the future, is really looking at the calibration of the model. And I'm not sure, Jeff, if you put any of that information in the technology report.
Yeah. I mean, we have some summary statistics that address that, and I think that the, you know, the residuals and the goodness of fit and all those sort of met or were consistent with other measures.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, we don't think this statistic, as you said, it should be the only criteria by
right.
which it's judged. Nevertheless, the point is that that's the criteria that most people apply when they look at these.
Well,
models.
I mean, that point was made. I mean, you know, it's something that's required for publication, so people really focus on it, but in terms of adequacy of risk models, that shouldn't be the only determinant.
Right. And I think it also partly suggests the possibility that it's not really the clinical factors that are driving this, that indeed it may be who's implanting it, what's their experience training, and what are the hospital processes for ensuring that the right cases are being done by the right people at the right time.
I had a couple questions around the fact that this measure is only for the Medicare population. In general, how does that represent what portion of the total population receiving ICDs will be captured in this measure? In other words, how many folks under 65 undergo this procedure?
Well, if you look at the data from the ICD registry, the median age is in the 70s.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I just wanted to see. This is a question we get a lot when we see an age-restricted measure is, okay, who's not going to get measured? It seems in this case the vast majority of patients will get captured because they are in the Medicare population, but it's always nice to know just...
It depends on your definition of vast majority, but it's certainly, I think, in excess of 70% of cases are Medicare patients. The only, I think, not flaw, but the only consideration is that at this point we can't capture the Medicare not fee-for-service patients in this measure, so that does narrow the focus a little bit and reduces the cohort by about 15%, I think.
What's the reason for that? Just to take you out there. I had a question on one of the ones I already did. Is it restricted to fee for service?
My understanding, and Leanne, maybe you want to take this because you probably have a better.
Why would we restrict it?
I don't think the data aren't housed in the same place, and I don't think at this point that there is the mechanism or the means by which to bring those data sources together to develop a model with both cohorts. Certainly, the process, the measure variables, everything else, if we can get the outcome data, would be easy to implement, but it's just a matter of bringing those two data sets together. As I understand it, and I don't know if Harlan's still on the line, the Yale group has been discussing how to potentially bring that other group of patients in, because it's only going to become a larger and larger proportion of the Medicare population overall.
In looking at the 2003 to 2007 data, why is there a progressive decrease in the number in the population?
I'm sorry, what?
If you look at the total number of people reported from 2003 to 2006 and then 2007, why is there a progressive decrease in the number of lives? It goes from 70,000 to about 65,000.
Can you just point me to
it's
the...
It's in the documentation. Yeah. When you're looking at just the number of...
I'm not sure. Let me... Give me a second. I can try and find that. Is it in the introduction and overview?
In the introduction and overview. It's just looking at the total N.
And can you give me a page and paragraph?
What's the item
okay.
number?
Letter
number?
It can be... Let's just look at...
Oh, so you're talking about from Sana's data, the trends from 2002 to 2005, that there were a reduction in complication rates over that time?
No, I think I'm looking at all of the Medicare data in general, heart failure, MI, maybe it's more pertinent to the Brandeis data. So I'll hold that question. Is there any other points of discussion?
Thank you. 2F is identification of meaningful differences in performance. I don't think that this was covered by the Yale group. They said not applicable. Although based on discussions that we had today, I think they don't really believe that it's not applicable. I actually think that there are methods to identify statistically significant, practically meaningful differences in performance based on this, but it wasn't really covered. In this actual document, it wasn't covered by the Yale group. I put an N.
Did you want
to? Well, I think this gets back to the point where we're trying not to constrain and say exactly how CMS may identify outliers, and I think that's sort of how we have, you know, that's consistent with the prior measure. But again, if you go to page 40 of the measure methodology report, we have the distribution of the risk standardized measure rate. I would argue that actually, if you look at figure 6, there really is not that much evidence of clinically significant differences in the risk standardized complication rates. And I think that by and large has to do with the fact that this was taken from a single year of data, and that ICD volumes in general tend to be lower than they are for hospital PCI volumes. So that will create a sort of, that will inform how this measure is eventually implemented. And certainly one of the recommendations from the technical expert panel and the working group was that maybe this was a case where you had to bundle multiple years together to increase the volume so you weren't shrinking everybody to the mean, which is really what happens if you have low volume hospitals or a lot of low volume.
Based on this explanation, I'd be willing to give them a P. Go ahead.
Germane to that question, we're looking at figure 7, it appears that in many hospitals do perform less than 25 ICD implants annually. So it looks like the measure may suffer from what we call the low-volume operator paradox, meaning the low-volume operators tend to have the worst outcomes, but they have the greatest uncertainty about their results. Can you comment further? I'm not sure we should leave this being so vague.
Right.
Maybe there should be some at least recommendations to CMS that maybe you bundle 3 years worth of outcomes, and then you may have, the problem with that is you may have, you know, changing outcomes within a hospital, changing operators, but it seems like that needs a little more fleshing out and discussion.
I think that's a fair point. I know that the ACC put that in their letter and public comments for this measure specifically, and I think that's a very, speaking as a not as a clinical measure steward, that makes a lot of clinical sense to me to do that approach. I would caution, though, that this approach overestimates the low volume effect in the sense that the we again lose these because of the linking of the data between the ICD registry data and the administrative data, we're losing a certain percentage of that. And I can't say how many more patients we'll have, but there will be fewer very low volume hospitals.
The comparability of multiple data sources methods, I gave them a P. Very similar to the discussion that we had when we talked about the PCI.
Wouldn't it be not applicable? There's only the clinical data.
Actually,
right?
This is a little different situation because there's already the existing, and Leanne, correct me if I'm wrong, there's already the existing mechanism by which hospitals submit cases to the ICD registry. So in this case, we would hope or anticipate that it would be a single vendor and single source for the data.
Right, but it's really the same clinical data, even if there were multiple vendors.
Does it make more sense to make that a not applicable because we don't need to compare?
Is that
really
great?
Yeah.
So 2H is disparities in care. We have actually shown disparities in ICD use based on age, gender, race, what have you. We also have shown using the ICD registry that women are more likely to have certain complications compared with men. So I'm interested in hearing, you know, the group's thoughts about the applicability of disparities in care. It seems to me that at least based on some of the preliminary data that we have from the ICD registry suggesting that women are more likely to have complications. I wonder if this becomes more applicable here.
Is that in the risk adjustment model?
I'm sorry? I believe it was a covariate, but honestly, I can't remember. Let me look it up right now. So in the final, female gender is one of the covariates in the model.
Mm-hmm.
Race, socioeconomic status, we're not.
Would this be, if there is a substantial difference between genders, would that be information useful to a wider audience of that difference, that you would, rather than risk adjust it, that you would want to stratify it and say, you know, the rate for males is this and the rate for females is this?
I think that would be, it's a reasonable suggestion. I think it would really compromise, given the low volume that we're already struggling with, but I think that on balance, I would probably support using a single measure for
mm-hmm.
both genders.
Well, just as for, so the ARC measure for AMI looks at gender and age grouping, but that has a different audience
mm-hmm.
and perhaps a different purpose. So it may be the accumulation of data across institutions that might provide a more meaningful piece of information about risk. I don't know, do you think that, that enters into
yeah,
the... Does that enter into this evaluation? Because it may not be useful on an individual.
I mean, that's a good question. I'm fine with not doing anything other than gender adjusting in the risk adjustment model. But any thoughts on the group? Because it sounds like the numbers are going to be too small to stratify.
I think so. I think there's also no evidence that at a hospital level that gender, the effect of gender differs. So I think that we would probably, the papers that are being published are kind of probably the way to get that message out, that maybe we don't have the right type of devices to implant in this type of person as opposed to another gender person.
So you'd give that a not applicable?
Not applicable.
Okay,
next is usability, and 3A has to do with meaningful, understandable, and useful information. I gave it a P, and the main reason why I did that is because I'm not sure how much we need to prove before we start to measure that it is capable of providing meaningful, understandable, and useful information for public reporting. I mean, do we have to prove that in a systematic way, doing some sort of study, or... Do I believe that based on what the measure is, it will capture what's meaningful? I was probably a bit unclear on what we're trying to capture with this one.
Okay. I think what the criteria is attempting to address the fact that you have a wide audience out there. Clearly, this is meaningful at your provider levels and your professionals. The question is, do other people find it useful, actionable, or something that is going to have meaning for them? And by the others, I'm thinking on the, is a consumer going to get it? Is a payer going to get it? Is it going to be useful for folks outside the actual practitioners providing this particular care?
I can address that just a little bit, in that we did on the technical expert panel have a broad range of stakeholders, including people who were trying to provide the John Santo from Consumer Reports is actually helping us make sure that there was that this would be valid and useful for consumers. So that perspective was taken into account with no identification of any barriers.
Right, and we don't often get specific usability testing. Sometimes with the CMS measures, you know, we have gotten focus group testing, et cetera. But so it really comes down to a lot of times the expertise of our staffs and certainly the steering committee that's multi-stakeholder. But, you know, on face value, consumers tend to be interested in complications, and certainly providers are as well for quality improvement purposes.
Certainly, it's kind of a gut-level, intuitive level. It's pretty obvious. I'd love to see here.
Yeah, so if you don't require any type of formal testing of usability, then I would give it a C. Next is harmonization. I put not applicable because I am not aware of any other measure that looks at the same issue. Okay. Distinctive or additive, it's definitely distinctive, so I would give it a C. And now down to feasibility. Any comments on usability? So feasibility, so data generated as a byproduct of care processes, definitely, I mean, as I said, you know, the submission of this is mandatory, but the part that I wasn't very clear on is what happens with ICD implants for secondary prevention on Medicare patients. So if we're focusing this to Medicare patients, I don't have to worry about the non-Medicare patients. Or what about ICDs that get implanted for VT and for cardiac arrest? Those, I'm not sure how many we're capturing in the ICD registry, and that's why for 4A, I gave it a P. Was I off in my...
If the issue is how... If CMS were to implement how CMS will capture or get the data of those secondary group of the patients, right? I understand from Yale's analysis, there was about 78% of the hospital that submitted data to ACC submit both group of patients.
Yes.
And I understand what you gave me a number is 85. I don't know what's that 85% about. But if it's 78 or 85, so we're talking about CMS will need to ask the 22% or 15% of the hospital that submit additional data, submit additional data to CMS. So, you have to understand that currently, it's very different from other measures. All these hospitals currently have the infrastructure to and have the process in place to submit the data. So for CMS to implement it, I think it is much more feasible than you think about for other measures, because other parts of the CMS, like CAC, coverage payment group, are already submitting, collecting this data. So. Does that answer that secondary group of questions? About 22% or 15% of hospitals that we will be getting.
Right. So the bottom line, the plan is to implement it on the full spectrum of patients receiving ICDs, not just primary prevention Medicare patients.
Question I think this measure is also starting to try and capture is more at the front end, not how it gets to CMS, but within the hospital itself. Say, for instance, one of the few hospitals that actually has an EHR, is there a mechanism by which that data that's already electronic is readily sent to the registry such that it doesn't need to go through a human abstractor kind of thing? Are there these upfront, or these processes available that can be encouraged so that the whole thing becomes, whatever data you're entering to take care of the patient just automatically is captured for the data and sent to the registry as well. Is that something that's being worked on or done by anyone that you're aware of? I mean, what are you doing at Yale?
Manual. Very, very much manual abstraction and submission. I mean, everybody uses the 95 plus, and I don't have the exact percentage, I don't know if you know, Laura, the uses the ICD registry data submission portal, and only a very small minority use software vendors. The vendors might have that if they were to develop, although I don't think that there's a big move or a big market for it, so it probably won't happen. They would have that inbuilt advantage that they could construct it so you're pulling in elements from electronic medical records. But at the time, I don't see that as being...
Actually, we're starting to see measures that are constructed that way, so you can kind of see where the future's going. So it'd be nice to sort of keep that in mind as we move forward to transition into the whole EHR realm.
Right. And just to clarify a little bit about 4A and 4B, what the intent of those criteria are, it's this, you know, the reason they're under feasibility is what's the burden to collect the data. So the first thing is, are the data actually generated during care? Is it information that's generated by the clinicians, used by the clinicians in providing care, rather than something that has to be collected later? And then the electronic sources, although these data are in an electronic database, they still require coding and abstraction, unless, as Reva talked about, they're already in computer-readable fields. So it does require that burden of data abstraction by someone at this point, unless certain systems may have computer systems that they can extract this information. But that's what we're trying to get at with these two criteria. And obviously, NQF is interested in moving towards measures eventually that will be extracted from electronic health records.
Okay, so based on all the above, I would change 4A to C.
Mm-hmm.
I would change 4B to C as well. Exclusions, I had to put P, but based on what we heard, I would give it a C as well, and 4D would be a P.
Do you want to comment on your P before 4D?
Well, I mean, because these databases are definitely, they're not going to be perfect. I'm pretty sure there are inaccuracies. What we do with the ICD registry is there, like anything that does not make sense or does not fall within an acceptable range, rejected so that people who are submitting the data can revise and resubmit. But we're only auditing 10% of the chart, and I haven't really seen the results of that. So I can't give it a C without seeing data that show that there are no or minimal errors.
Okay, that's
great. So 4E, I gave it a C.
Any other comments?
Public comments?
Do we have any public comments? Or comments from teleconference?
Is anyone on the line, the phone line? Okay. Good to know there's nobody there.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. So at this point, the temperature's gone up 15 degrees in this room.
With all the computers going, right?
We're supposed to have a working lunch. I think people need to be fortified before going on, but I think grab something to eat or take a little bit of a break, and then we can come back and talk about the AMI and CHF and composite measures. I don't know at what point we may get to the ARC measure. We'll see. We'll have to see. But I think the sequence we would go in, we can chat about when we... could be back after getting some lunch.
Okay. Yeah. Lunch for the committee and our developers. Yes. Out to you.
That's a big thing about the data available and that you have.
Usually not. I feel like I'm more familiar with these criteria. Not to be. say that they're automatically populated.
I think they code it right when they come in.
I'll let you know what happened with the grant, but then after that, there's 2 years between each one. Planning for the 2015 one will begin shortly after the 2013 one. So you'll hear me as well.
Yeah. You don't usually know that. I mean, that's the stranger part of this process, right? I'm sure there's lots of sort of here I work on the committee that is giving you they made the case that Archer you know, we got the comment back from the coaches and I they're feeling
No,
it's actually helpful to know. But it we've been elected, I tell you.
Okay.
They just tell me where to go. And I sit here and I work.
So that's, and when I would like them to
It's a separate measure that CMS is not
contracted
for the measures.
I work with
looking at.
Okay.
Right. Because it involves all age groups?
Not in the
age.
Okay.
So we do AMI, ED, E&M, and composite. And then we'll do ESA, ED, E&M. So all the controversy that will be generated about composite
will be all.
E&M will be hopefully inform how much we have to talk about.
I hope.
What about you? What else are you looking at here? Right now, I'm actually working. I do some work related to the performance measurement, but I lately have been working on a project. I just started with the centers of program evaluation, looking at very different. I mean, it's actually just well, that's right. Where I work, just like it's every it was interesting because I kind of rolled onto the project right around Christmas time and. With all the kind of the recent events, not Haiti, but prior to that, with the Columbia shooting, the animal concussion. So it's all kind of timely, and it's very interesting. And then I have to give another project to the U.S. helping doing environmental scanning, collecting all the performance measures in the world, in theory, and creating a database for them. But that one I had actually we had helped kind of manage that project. So that was actually really interesting because measures that are out there. So it would be not just measures that have been right. And even measures that have been developed, because we looked at the NQF space and the ARC warehouse, and we spoke with we got input from I guess most of the CMS measures that are in use are in the ARC clearinghouse. But we did get some additional information, I think, from Eddie Garcia. He's been on our call.
And in the end, we actually went out to the developer.
We had a list of,
typically they take long,
they move their website,
because
they
go
for measures,
and then
we created a database
with
what's top. And now, kind of, you're thinking about this main
arena. Oh, this is
the time. I spent a couple of months collecting information.
This cat? This is the cat?
It's outstanding already,
The next one is deer.
But, I think it'll continue to evolve.
This is the concept.
Because it makes sense for them to have a handle on what's been developed by Premier or that maybe CMS isn't using, but, kind of to create some synergies. Because somebody's waiting. They could know where we're ready.
All right, what is your...
where are we not ready?
I'm doing health.
Oh, really? One month.
Graduated from graduate school and started working.
Which one went to Western Methodist?
Jeremy Prager.
I know a couple Prager.
So where did you
start?
Prager. Los Angeles.
Prager now.
Okay. Not related. That one not related.
You know what? I know.
When was that?
Talking and rolling.
You two were talking about burnout after 18 years.
The lady sat close to the liver transplant with IVF triplets. She's pretty much very
well, I'm mistaken, they took it on men in the lab.
It was my colleague, in fact, a med school buddy, who had the octuplets last year. So you were at Virginia Mason. I went to one of my dearest friends from med school and
whatever the clinical study design
Randy Pritchett?
We have a great
friend. I was med school together. We were very good friends. In fact, I came up visiting him. He did general surgery of 2 years up at UW, and then he came back down to USC to do his urology training. And so I visited when he was in Seattle. Then,
That's all I need.
There was another close friend of ours, but I had off the schedule, so Randy and I were always
the cancer center, they do all the oral immunotransplant money.
I remember Randy last year, the transplant med student was trying to get his white guys in the
way. He was working in relation to the university.
Somebody who's been up today.
Patients, to give you the sort of scope of the issue. The an overarching issue for my voting will be that this is on the administrative set of data, the claims data, and not the clinical data, which may be different. I'm coming from issue that the diagnosis of MI is somehow fluid right now, those in working in the clinical field, because of the new criteria for QDMI, improved testing for a diagnosis of MI, so sort of the administrative set of data and clinical data might be discrepant and are such in my experience. So if I can just go, the conditions for considerations, they were all met, and I all agree that they are met. I would then go to the importance to measure and report the one high impact. I gave it a P for the reason that I say is that the reasons for ED visit are not specified to related to acute MI or coronary disease only, but to others. So I'm not entirely sure what will be the impact of this information, because it might be confounded by visit to the emergency department with, for other reasons. And this has been an important area, but you know the measure itself may not be important because it will encompass many other reasons for the visit. And the 1B, opportunity for improvement. The opportunity for improvement, it's substantial, but again, I have a P, I think, are we there? Yeah. Yes, 1B. I have it as C because I think it's a significant issue, although one could discuss, and I would ask the co-reviewer what opinions are regarding this, because as I said, the information will not be disease or the MI or coronary disease specific, but I gave it a C. Any discussion to it? Then 1C, outcome or evidence to support measure focus. I'm repeating myself. It is outlined throughout that my view it is not a C because it does not completely support the measure focus, because again, as I said, it is not related to the disease, and also the ED visit might relate to the two entities who participate in the care, the hospital and the hospital team, and in a certain systems there is a good continuity of care because of how the system is set up. But what's in an institution, hospitals in which you have a large PMD setting, which may function under the hospital or their own practice, and the hospital may not have significant possibility to impact the revisit in the emergency department, and that's why I gave it just a P. Then we go to
comments.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Also, isn't there a secondary reviewer for this one?
I think Dr. Finland.
I have three other ones.
Oh, okay.
I was supposed to have four?
No.
Okay. No.
Oh, okay. That sounds like it.
Okay. I have
comments.
Yeah.
I have three
comments. you were more generous than I was. I have the analogous measure 30-day readmission ED visit for heart failure. And I think that a lot of the issues are quite similar. I first of all completely agree with the problem that this measure will capture all kinds of totally unrelated visits to the ED, including trivial visits that don't end up being leading to a hospitalization. Colds and all kinds of things why people come to the emergency room. And I think that that's a major limitation of this. And I think that also in the context of the fact that we have an existing measure, both for MI and for heart failure, which is the 30-day readmission rate. And so I think that I'm sure get to this later on, but the issue of whether this ED visit rate will add anything to the existing measure, I think, is extremely questionable. I don't find any evidence that that will add anything. And so, as I said, if you were more generous than I did, I get much lower ratings for the importance of measuring for heart failure. But I have the same view with respect to this particular measure. I'm not convinced that that this measure is important and that it will provide information with respect to the useful in addition to the existing measure for public reporting or for quality improvement.
Could we have a comment from the measure of promoter?
Hi, I'm Chris Tompkins. I'm from Brandon Arts University. I'm a health services researcher. We're approaching this from the point of view of care coordination and care transition. And the notion here is not, this is not complications. This is about the ability to influence the trajectory of patients who are coming out of an acute inpatient setting and asking the question whether those patients are being well treated in the aftermath of the hospitalization. And we're using it in a relatively common sense. That is that the premise is that when, and there are other measures too, there's not just the ED, but there's evaluation and management, yeah, which you've all seen. The premise is that a hospital that's sitting inside a delivery system where the patient trajectory tends to show relatively responsive ambulatory follow-up and relatively fewer high acuity incidents such as the ED and such as readmissions are tending to evidence better care coordination than hospitals with delivery systems where you see some other trajectory. The all-cause notion, I mean, this is built upon, this is pivoting on the already endorsed CMS measure of 30-day readmission rates, which the methodology is very the same, very much the same here. And the philosophy of all-cause, I would argue, is entirely appropriate. This is not trying to say, did somebody do something exactly wrong and precisely wrong inside the hospital episode? But these are high acuity, vulnerable, frail populations leaving the hospital. And under the rubric of care transitions and care coordination, is somebody intercepting these people and noticing and identifying and watching these people before there are adverse events of any sort? One further comment about the all-cause. I mean, the proverbial poster child for the argument against all-cause is something like a car accident, which has nothing to do, presumably, with the AMI or the heart failure. The model is constructed to show variation between what is seen versus what's expected. And there are a certain number of events that occur to people that are not related to the reason for hospitalization. They will occur in the denominator pretty much equally distributed across hospitals. And the point is not to say that every instance of an ED visit is somehow, ipso facto, a critique of the quality of any given patient or any given hospital. The point is, can you show divergence and using measures to signal the delivery system that systemness and care transitions and care coordination are important part of 21st century healthcare?
To what extent
about the same
add to the readmission criteria? I guess
it's not perfectly correlated with the ED.
So do you have data to show that?
Well, yeah, we have the composite measure.
Sorry, I'm not a primary reviewer, so I haven't looked this over the detail.
I mean,
but it would seem to me
just as an overview, we have the two we have the AMI and the heart failure cohorts. And for each of those, before you somehow, are the evaluation and management and the ED visits, which are companion measures to the 30-day readmission rates.
Are you identifying
measures,
different hospitals or different hospital systems by the two measures, or are they concordant? And can you share some statistics with us?
I'm sorry. If you rank ordered hospitals on one, is that what you're asking?
You could answer it right if you have that data, yeah.
Well, we've seen correlations of the performance across these measures, and it doesn't. I'm not sure if I have all this documentation. We don't have too much documentation. I'm not sure that I would be able to say that a hospital that necessarily performed badly on readmission
was exactly identified as performing bad on ED admissions or doing well on evaluation of entry. We can look to see.
It seems intuitively there would be quite a correlation, but I don't have the data. I thought you might.
But it's not necessarily a function of just the hospital.
Yeah, that's one thing. The second thing is that at least high, you know, volume, low volume hospital, there's not much difference in this rate that is provided. That's so no.
But what you're proposing is, as a model, would be that the ED visit, just as the E&M visit, can be an opportunity to avoid readmission. But is that correct?
I'm sorry, I heard the latter half of what you said.
What you hypothesize is not only that the E&M visit can avoid a readmission, but hopefully the ED visit can avoid a readmission.
It's true that, in general, somebody having high acuity and going to the emergency department is a bad thing. But yes, it's a relative thing as well, too. If you can avoid readmissions and be seen in the emergency department, that's a trade-off that our later composite measure accepts as giving you a better score. So that is true. And then ultimately what is better would be an evaluation and management that intercepted and presumably in some cases prevented either of those.
Go ahead, Dr. Sirsak.
Yeah, I was going to just say, I don't see, let's say, if I'm on the hospital side and I am ranked as a higher, or let's say, higher rate of readmission to the emergency department in this patient population, I would have difficulty where to focus my, I would first have to see what I readmitted, then I would be able to make any improvement measure. That's I see. The next one we have the measure specifications, right? 2A.
So 1C you gave a P to.
Yeah. It's actually specified, I think it is.
Okay. Yeah, 2A.
Mm-hmm. I gave it a P initially. I would actually upgrade to C here because it quite well specifies the numerators and timeliness and the detail. In terms of exclusions, I think they are well documented for the readmission. I thought I was going to see because it's already used already. And then I come to reliability testing. Here I had the most problems, in terms of.
One question on exclusion, this also comes up for the heart failure one, but it's unclear to me how patients who die within the 30-day time window will be accounted for. Will those people be in the numerator and denominator, or both, neither, or what?
People who are discharged from the hospital that were included in the denominator.
And if they die within 30 days without a ED visit or EMM visit?
Well, then they would be measured by the mortality rate if associated with the same hospital.
Yeah, how will they be considered in this measure? So
if
they're in the denominator, will they be in the numerator also or not?
If they had an evaluation and management, or if they had an emergency department, or if they had a readmission before they died, they would be found in our numerator, and if none of those happened, they would be excluded, or they would be found not to be in the numerator of these particular measures.
But even if they died on day number 2 after discharge?
If they died what?
On day number 2 after discharge and didn't have 28 days.
Right. Yeah, I mean, somebody earlier on the phone, I think, mentioned about we're trying to build a portfolio of measures that all speak to different facets of quality. We're already measuring mortality for these cohorts, and if that's a systematic problem for a delivery system, it would show that way. To the extent that people are survivors, they're discharged and are entering the 30-day window, they are candidates for these measures as well.
Just to clarify, that the answer to the question is that they're in the numerator and the denominator.
Are you going to say if all your patients died, you're not going to show it looking bad on these measures? That would be technically true, but that doesn't mean your delivery system is going to look good across a set of measures that tries to look at outcomes.
It'll look good across these three measures, the three continuity of care measures that you're proposing.
Because they never had the opportunity to use it.
They'll be in the denominator, but not in the numerator for any of the measures, including the composite measure.
If you're interested, in January of 2009 in Health Affairs, I wrote an article that said exactly this.
that you want to, there's a certain amount of a hierarchical ordering to various kinds of outcomes, and you want to look at the worst possible instances, and then among people who didn't have that, you then work down to lower level things. So you'd say, first of all, did somebody die? If no, then were they readmitted? If no, then did they go to the emergency department? If no, and if not, these go to evaluation management. But we're trying to build the building blocks to fill out that vision. But there's a certain amount of entry fee here to try to get into the ball game when you can make the measures sort of speak and harmonize differently. If you're saying that you would think it would be an improved measure to exclude from consideration for these measures anybody who died any time during the 30-day period, that's a possible variation on this. But we would say that as long as somebody's surviving, to the extent that they are bouncing into the ED or being readmitted, and on the positive side, if they're seen by clinicians for evaluation and management, those are all good signals. But again, care coordination. This is not intended to say this is the DL end all. This is to say, is the hospital not a silo, but is the hospital actually influencing trajectories to the betterment of the patient?
So I think there's kind of two issues here. Just one is the technical issue of how that situation will be handled with respect to the numerator and denominator. I think that the other issue is for later on in talking about a composite, it seems to me that the composite measure should also include deaths that occur within 3 days, even if it's without any of the other events, without an ED visit, without a hospitalization, with or without an E&M visit. Even with an E&M visit, if a person dies within 30 days, that's not good. I think that it's just something I think that should be considered in thinking about what you're trying to accomplish with composite.
Right, that's right. I mean, again, we're trying to get the ball rolling here, but you're right. A comprehensive composite measure of outcomes properly specified and properly ordered in terms of their hierarchy would be a second generation vision. Okay.
And I have variability testing. Can we move to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just looked at the whole testing analysis. You know, TB go to F, and initially I gave it a P. I would downgrade to M because I looked more and more on this correlations, which is calculated. I have some statistical advice colleagues, and they all felt that there was very poor correlation that they were calculated. So that's why I downgraded it to the minimally. I don't think that the models are really that helpful. If you go, so the same goes for the validity testing. You know, the CIS statistic is 0.053. You know, and there's another model 0.055. So these are relatively low, so I don't think that they I understand the discussion before that the statistics shouldn't be all in all the parameter, but I do believe it's a very important one, and I think it's very weak in my judgment when I was advised. So that's what it's an M and M on 2 on 2, B and 2 C in my judgment. Exclusions are justified, I think, not complete, I would give it a P. And then risk adjustment outcomes, I think, are not very strong either. So I gave it a P, with no understanding, but certain predictors vary from year to year. And again, as I said, the statistic is 0.55 only. Identification of meaningful differences in performances, I gave it a key. My main issue here is that the differences, in the variation among the hospitals, if I get this right, about 5 to 7% would be due to differences, among the hospitals. So it's relatively small, the way that this would be helpful, I felt. But I would ask those who proposed this model and worked with it extensively, and it's an extensive long explanation here, that they sort of opine on it, I would really value if you know, the person who's done that is here, in which you see the strength of this model, how much can this help us with this, what I just said, of the critique that I heard.
Well, just in broad strokes, the statistical performance of the evaluation and management ED visits, which are the ones you're considering now, are just pretty much similar to the readmission rate. So if you're talking about the ability of the risk adjusters, which were borrowed from the readmission measure, although we did a little bit of sensitivity analysis to see whether that could be incrementally improved, and possibly it could, but it really wasn't worth making a difference. If statistical performance in terms of the R-squared and the C-statistic and the interquartile range and so forth are a criterion for of utmost consideration, then the previously endorsed CMS readmission measure are the same. As a matter of fact, the evaluation management measure performs better than the readmission measure on reliability testing. But again, I wouldn't make that such a bold claim as to be a qualitative difference. It's just that this is the nature of the world, and the data for Medicare for these two cohorts, this is how much discriminating ability there are among hospitals now under status quo conditions in 2007.
Perhaps worth pointing out that when we look at these measures and the measures that are aggregated into the composite measures, we may come to the conclusion that a single measure of those three may not be sufficient in itself for us to recommend that it be approved, but that the composite measure might be something we might want to consider approving with modification. So it's not necessarily the case that if we don't approve one measure of the composite, the entire composite is out.
The issue of the predictive capability of the model, is that largely driven by the fact that it's an administrative data set? In other words, if somebody here had looked at a clinical data set, would that drive up the predictability, or is there...
At least that wasn't the case for mortality and readmission rate. Yale, who was here earlier, which were the pioneers of the mortality and the readmission rate, took that question on exactly. It said, if you added clinical data to the risk adjustment model, could you predict better what's going to happen to people in the 30-day period? And they say, this much, which doesn't justify all the issues that you're raising this morning about the burden of getting such data and the comparability across institutions and so forth.
It's 2G, right? Which is the comparability of multiple data sources that doesn't apply. I think it's just one source, so it doesn't apply. And disparity of care, doesn't apply. I think it didn't.
I guess I have a question about the disparities of care then. Is the mortality one adjusted for disparities in care, or
no?
You mean race?
No. You mean including SES and race?
No,
it's not.
No, we attested for sensitivity, but otherwise ended up borrowing off the shelf the same risk adjustment model and the same statistical model that's used in the already endorsed CMS measures.
This is my simplistic thinking. Mortality is one event, it's a measure. The emergency, the end point, what you count here is emergency, it's much more variable in terms of clinical significance and what we do comparing to the mortality. That's where it is.
For ED visits, I mean, there's a higher number of ED visits for people who don't have primary care physicians, who don't potentially have the opportunity, who are not insured, so they go to the ED.
No, or you have, let's say, hospital in a center with other private primary physicians that are in private practice who not necessarily work with the hospital. So it's also a different setup than that in the Kaiser system and a system which has a more structured care.
Right. So it seems as if, though, ED visits are very directly related to socioeconomic status, right? And wouldn't that be something?
Well, for Medicaid populations, it often is. And, you know, I mean, the purpose of an endorsement is to say that, you know, a measure makes sense using all the criteria that there are. To the extent that what you could implement it by a Medicaid
agency, for example. They might want to, you know, recalibrate it for their population based on expectations. And you're right. The manner in which, through care coordination or other means, that a delivery system could improve its performance on these measures might be different across various populations. This happens to be modeled on the covered Medicare population. So it's not as if they, at least until now, it's not as if they have been denied access to physicians.
And to going further to usability, meaningful, understandable, and useful information. Give it a P. I think it's you know, it's not completely, you know, I spoke to it already, you know, where I see the deficiencies. 3B is harmonization. I think it's harmonized across, I think, very well. If it uses the same criteria as was stated, with the NKF 30-day work cost, you know, with the admission rate and so forth. And then distinctive or additive value. I think I wrote it a P there. You know, I'm not sure how much this would add as a measure in itself, maybe as a part of the composite measure. Otherwise, I think it includes too many, I discussed it, you know, issues, possibilities of, you know, mistakes because of it's an administrative set of data, not mistake in a sense there, but it's a difference from the clinical situation, and of course also the different reasons for readmission, as we said several times. Then the feasibility.
I disagree with the last point regarding whether question whether it adds anything over above existing measures. I think I always score that as an M or an N. I think that there's a lack of evidence to suggest that this is going to, as I also suggested before, is this going to identify a new group of hospitals that are not performing adequately compared to the group that is identified through the 30-day readmission criteria. I think we need some evidence in support of that.
Yeah, I could support your downgrade. I mean, I was... Feasibility.
I would leave it at M.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Feasibility, I think it's a C for a data generator. Electronics, sources, a C. Exclusions, I gave it a C because there are used one and I didn't find anything related. And 4D, susceptibility, inaccuracies, errors, and unintended consequences. I put it as a P because it's an administrative set of data. They could be coding issues with the coding, as I said, especially with the era of changing what's actually a diagnosis of acute MI with the 5 MIs that the ACC and AHA are proposing now to be used, which are not really penetrated clinical practice as much yet, but they might. This will be then a difference. In terms of the data collection and strategy implementation, I think it can be implemented, it can be done, data is available, right? Could you go a little further down? 4E. Yeah, this is my mistake. It should be a C. I should correct that. That's my typo. I apologize for that. So this is the end of my evaluation. So in general, you know, the several times said the major concerns about the measure that I've seen, that I found.
Question to the measure developer. Is there perhaps, have you done any looking at how these two measures do compare in terms of the readmission as well as the ED visit, the numbers, the overlap, you know, put them side by side to see, you know, what tells you what about what's happening with the patients who've been recently hospitalized?
Well, a couple of things. I think that a takeaway message for us to do is to do actually following up on the comment about, does this identify a new batch of hospitals? This may be the question you're asking, or part of the question you're asking. If our hospitals that are seemingly doing just splendidly on readmission rate, are all their patients going to the emergency department and none of them are seen by a doctor afterwards? Seems unlikely. But also the other is not true either. But we'll come back somehow, whether it gets to the steering committee stage or back to NQF, about this new batch hypothesis. The other thing is that, part of the origins of, again, what we're talking about is care coordination and care transitions, which means more than one thing. It means multiple providers being given a message that around a patient-centric framework, that there's a handoff to responsibility, appropriate handoff to responsibility, so that good things happen more often and bad things happen less often. And when care coordination, which is sometimes tested in delivery systems, whether it's multidisciplinary teams, whether it's phone calls, faxes, text messaging, other kinds of protocols, they're all different manner by which care coordination can be implemented or improved. But when it's tested to see whether there's an ROI or to see whether it's effective, these are the combinations of measures that are actually used. Hence our argument about validity is that these things, people generally who are responsible for monitoring and managing delivery systems use these as multiple indicators, because in and of itself, isn't it useful to know or to think that Medicare beneficiaries leaving the hospital see a doctor? You know, not just an emergency room doctor, but see a doctor. Isn't that a good thing? Isn't that a signal to send? And so even though somebody might drill down readmission rates by raising the readmission threshold from the emergency department, which is different from reducing readmissions by making sure that somebody's seen within a few days before progression and acuity can get out of control.
So I agree 100% conceptually with the notion of trying to measure continuity of care, transitions in care, and so forth. That's clearly an area where there's substantial variability, there's considerable room for improvement, and a lot of errors occur, both, I think, in the post-acute coronary syndrome setting as well as in the heart failure setting. The question is, and I think this is what the challenge is how to measure it. And I think that it's not a simple issue, and it may require multiple measures, a composite of some sort to get it. But I think that it's not clear to me that that this particular measure, the ED visit, actually provides new and useful information beyond the existing measure. And that's my main concern about this particular measure. And we haven't seen any data that it does. So.
You mean among the identifying hospitals with regard to readmission measures?
Yes. Yeah, if it did that, if we saw some evidence there, and it sort of shows that it clearly provides incremental information that is reflects this transitional process, then I think that would be useful and worthwhile. But we're not seeing that at this point.
Okay. Again, in terms of singling out one hospital over another, rather than thinking of the ED as something that maybe was avoidable and wasn't a good thing to happen to that patient, irrespective of the readmission.
Yeah, so when we talk about heart failure, I have some other thoughts about this ED issue, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily germane to the MI situation with ED visits, so I'm not going to mention that.
The point well taken about the different hospitals. The premise here is that you're sending multiple messages to the delivery system as to what are good expectations. And avoiding emergency department visits is a good expectation.
But at the same time, I think Charlie mentioned on the phone, we need to develop a portfolio of measures. But we also want a parsimonious one, so we don't have several measures that are essentially measuring the same thing. So that's sort of what the issue is. What's the most parsimonious way to measure this transition? And we don't have a way of directly measuring it, so we have to use these latent measures. And is it a three that you're proposing, including the existing one? Would a combination of two of them be better? I think that we don't know. And I think that that's where we need additional data to clarify what the best strategy is for gaining insight into this and for measuring it in a way that will be useful for the public reporting and for the quality improvement process.
So if I could kind of jump in here, the way that Chris has characterized these measures are, you know, companion measures. So I would posit that, you know, a hospital would want to know, okay, if I'm lowering my readmission rate, what's happening to those patients? Are they now being shifted to the ED? So in that sense, I think that this would be a very useful measure for hospitals that are trying to improve quality of care to, you know, help them avoid some of these unintended consequences of shifting people to different settings that you might not want them to go to. You would rather them go to their primary care physician and get care in the ambulatory setting before they had to go to an ED. Second, I just had a procedural question. What is the process for getting this additional information to the TAP?
A couple of things. What we can do is whatever information you provide to us, we can circulate among the TAP members. The final information that will go to the TAP, go to the steering committee, will be, you know, kind of an amalgamation of all of this input. So, you know, we would need it relatively soon.
Okay.
But we want everyone to be as informed and have as much information as possible. So we still have some, you know, deadlines to meet.
I'm thinking of this in perspective, just as Dr. Rich in the heart failure arena, because that's where I've been assigned measures to look at. But I think that it's important to go back to the original proposed tenets of NQF and make a distinction between quality assurance measures alone and quality assurance measures that need to be reported. And I would suggest that this particular measure might be very informative for a given institution to examine their continuity of care, to examine where are my patients going and how often are they going to the emergency room instead of a private visit. But to be something that is publicly reported and interpretable, I have reservations.
Can I ask a point of clarification? Maybe it's just a commentary. So there's a cost to collecting all these things. I would certainly agree that good not to have your heart failure or your AMI patients readmitted or seen in the emergency room. Those are both bad things and we'd like to discourage them. But there is a cost associated with collecting all this stuff. And I know from my own institution, for instance, we spend $2 million annually, this is the Heart and Vascular Institute only, in collecting data such as this and reporting to various agencies. This is $2 million of non-reimbursed costs, lost. So there's a cost to this. Is that part of NQF's agenda to consider that, or is this not really an issue?
No, absolutely. It's one of the criteria. That's what we asked in that's one of the major issues around.
So I realize it's a value issue. There's a cost.
Right, but I think it's the whole, one of the big reasons for that importance to measure and report criteria is that there are finite resources for collecting data and, you know, processing, reporting, and so to focus in on those things that are most apt to help us make significant gains in quality. So I think the question about is this providing new information over the other measure is part of that question as well.
A couple things. First of all, NQF endorsement of a measure is not a mandate that anybody use it. It's just basically saying that, you know, it's passed whatever criteria. This particular thing is CMS running a computer. It's no burden of the institutions to collect anything. This is saying using Medicare data where we can just array things by chronology and look at care transitions, and it's putting people into buckets and counting things.
Right. These are using paid Medicare claims.
What would it be if you would report the disease-specific revisits to the emergency department? Because if
that would be a real can of worms. Then talk about gaming opportunities. If you wanted to stay off the radar screen, you make sure your emergency department doesn't give any cardiovascular symptoms.
That's what we have. Maybe revisit if people don't game the system. But otherwise, if I'm responsible in a hospital and I have this measure and I'm reported that we are in the high end of of these percentages for a hospital, the first question anybody will ask, well, what